Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bobby Carpenter played in the NFL with the Cowboys. We remember that. He was an outstanding linebacker at Ohio State. He is the co-host of the Morning Juice on 97.1 The Fan in Columbus, Ohio, and he's a big part of SiriusXM college football discussion as well. And I've seen him on a lot of things like McAfee and other things as well. And he joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Denton, as all of you know, is the host of College Football Overtime on SiriusXM. Denton and Bobby do some stuff together. I got you on to talk about college football playoff, but you host a show in Columbus. So what's it been like there? What's it been like there this week after, the stunning 23.5-point favorite loss at home to the team up north?
It's been obviously an intense couple of days, and it's been like that the last 4 years. Regardless of the spread size or whatever it looked at, wherever it opened, wherever it closes, winning that game is such a big deal. And the last 4 years, it hasn't gotten done. And so there's questions that are always going to be asked. There's people that are always going to want the coach fired because of that. It's a new era in college football now where the finality of that game isn't quite the same as it maybe it was a year ago or 10 years ago or 15 with just how the playoff and everything is set up and the conferences are aligned. But I mean, it still hurts. It means a lot. And it lingers. I think last night was a little bit of a reset because when you look at potential matchups and that your team's still in and that they'll be hosting a home game, that I think kind of gives you something to look forward to. But the last couple of days, the last 3 days or so, it's been a very retrospective looking at this team, looking at that game and what transpired on Saturday.
You played at Ohio State. You played with the Dallas Cowboys. Denton and I have talked about this a lot in recent years. I think Ohio State's football fan base, you could argue, is the most passionate. It may not be the largest, Yankees, Cowboys, maybe Notre Dame still, but in terms of the pure passion and what it means to that fan base, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a fan base that's more passionate. And with that comes, the territory of, if you're the head coach of that team, you better beat your arch rival every once in a while, and it hasn't happened. So I'm curious, A, as to what you think to the first statement about the fan base, because you played for one that is more, national, international, if you want, with the Cowboys. And then, is the majority calling for Ryan Day's job or not?
I haven't seen any polls on this. I don't know if Quinnipiac puts out information.
Yeah, but you have a sense. Of us that do what we do have this anecdotal, kind of feel for it.
Yeah, I here's the problem, though, with that is it's always the people that yell the loudest to get heard the most. And I don't know if that's indicative of like fan bases at large, not just Ohio State. So I think that that's a little bit of part of it. Sure. I mean, there was someone yesterday, I was like, well, Ohio State's most likely, I would say with probably about 85 to 90% certainty now, going to host a home game. And I tweeted that out, they're playing Tennessee. It may change. Maybe they play someone else, but they're going to be hosting. It'll probably be an SEC team. And the guy responded, doesn't matter, season's over. And I'm like, okay, well, that's one way to feel. And there are people that feel that way. I think at large, yeah, you go through the grief process of it. I mean, there's a faction of people that say, hey, Ryan, yeah, fire Ryan Day now, get an interim coach. Like you still have a chance to win a national championship. And if you've watched college football this year, I don't think there's any behemoth or juggernaut team that you would say is an overwhelming favorite. It's like I've always been a believer, like, let's judge the movie after we see the ending. This is a part of it. It's a huge chapter. Don't get me wrong. And I'm not saying that it shouldn't matter because it's a massive piece of it. I think that there are a faction of people that are very upset and frustrated by this. I think there's some younger fans who like have grown up in this era where maybe it's not quite as intense because of how college football has changed and a lot of the rivalries and just it's not maybe what it was. And everybody was worried about going to this 12-team playoff. Like, would college football lose its fastball? Would the games not matter as much on a weekly basis? And I challenge everybody now after watching what happened this season and seeing some of these upsets, and whether it's Vanderbilt over Bama or Ohio State beating Michigan or Michigan beating Ohio State or whatever it is, and you look at, you know, the Florida State game, some of these things, it's been wild. And there are people that are going to feel that way. I think as the time – you know, increases after the game, those feelings subside for many rational fans. And then it's, hey, I look back at 2022, you play Georgia to, you know, a standstill and you lose the game on a missed field goal. People were kind of saying the same things then. And in the middle of that game, when Ohio State's winning, like, those feelings are then forgotten. So yeah, you have that in the immediacy, but usually it dissipates after a week. And obviously wins in the playoff will help that as well.
Do you agree with me, though, that the fan base is insanely passionate compared to almost any other in our country?
Yeah, you know, because it's one of the things, and I've talked to people, like, getting to do this locally and nationally.
Right.
And I try to tell people that, and like, well, you don't know what it's like other places. I'm like, I do, because I have friends that went there, and I talked to them about this. And I've gone to these other places. I've seen them practice. I've watched them play. I've been on the sidelines of, you know, Oklahoma and Alabama and Tennessee and Georgia and LSU and like different things like that, and getting to see it. I think it is probably the, as far as the largest concentration of passionate fans, it's the seventh largest state. It's got now, I mean, Cincinnati is Power Five, but I mean, it's the school in the state. 90% of the people in the state cheer for Ohio State with college football, maybe more. And then you have people all across the country that have been transplanted there. 60,000 go to school here every year, so you have alums everywhere. So there are a lot of people that care immensely about it, probably to a degree that you don't find anywhere else.
You know, when you were talking about the rivalry and how maybe young people view it, I think at the end of that game, one of the things that, you know, watching, and I love college football, and I love that game every year, you know, Thanksgiving weekend at noon, and the intensity of, you know, you played for the Cowboys, and you played, you know, long enough ago where you had a sense of what Redskins Cowboys was like for a long period of time, and it's just not that way anymore because this franchise here has been so bad. And look, professional rivalries just aren't the same as college rivalries, but the end of that game, it wasn't just fans. It wasn't just, you know, administrations. It was the players. And I find that actually, or found that refreshing, that the players were so intense about their dislike for one another. But with that said, how have you handled, and what have you said this week in your conversations about Michigan planting the flag and starting what it started there at the end?
So that's one of the things that's great about, you know, college football is like the connectivity between the fans and the students and the players and students and all of those things. And it's interesting, there was a narrative that was coming out that, you know, guys don't care as much before, you know, they're getting paid, it doesn't matter. And, you know, the win's a win, the loss a loss, and it's okay, you move on. And then you see that scene, and you saw it not just at Ohio State, but across college football, really, on Saturday. That was kind of the first thing. And I will say this, I'm pro field storming. Just do it respectfully and, like, celebrate with your team. I'm against flag planting because that's only leading to one thing, and that's what you saw on Saturday. It kind of started 20-some years ago, and Baker Mayfield had comments. But Baker's comments with regards to Red River are different because it's a neutral site field. I mean, you go back to the origins of, like, raising a flag over – I mean, it's essentially seizing someone's castle, seizing the territory. And like it's people that are proud. Those guys care a lot. They invest a lot of time in those rivalries. It's a year-long thing. And so, yeah, there was something refreshing about it. I wish it wouldn't have accelerated to where it was and escalated to that degree. Hopefully that you can get some adults in the room. And I don't – like, if you want to go celebrate, you want to swing a flag on the sideline in front of your fans and your band and everybody that came there, that's fine. I'm cool with that. You won the game. You can do it. But, you know, as another team – and this isn't me being hypocritical, because we had a big – battle going back and forth with Wisconsin when I played at Ohio State in the early 2000s. And I'll never forget my freshman year, one of our linebackers stood up in our Thursday night meeting, and he's like, it was up there. He goes, after we win, we're going to dance on that damn W. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is a lot, because the year before they did it at us, we had done it to them, and it had gone back and forth, and there were fights. And after the game, when it happened, like, Tress was like, we won. He's like, win with class, and like pointed everybody over there. Guys were starting to run. Coaches pushed him over, like, go celebrate with the fans that came here, whoever was involved, we can win this thing together. It's like, I've always been more of like the celebration of it, as opposed to, you know, leaning in to making sure that like the ownership of this and that. But it is, I would say, as bad as it seems, like, you can't say that people don't care. Everybody said the guys are getting paid, so it doesn't matter. These guys still have pride in where they play and what they do.
Yeah. By the way, Bobby, Baker planted that flag in the shoe right after Oklahoma beat Ohio State.
And that's the thing. They'd always done it at Red River. Then he did it here.
Right.
And that was, I mean, he didn't have a return trip. That was the second leg. Ohio State had won out there the prior year.
Got
and that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And since that time, like, I think Michigan did something similar in 2002. I don't remember to the same degree. But I think guys, it looked like that's not going to happen again. Not while we're on the field. And again, that's the problem. Like, you don't want to ever see it escalate to that. But when people do it, like, you get guys that are 18 to 22 that are fired up, they're emotional, and that's where emotions are going to lead.
We're talking to Bobby Carpenter. Bobby does a show in Columbus. He does work for SiriusXM's College Football Channel, former NFL linebacker with the Cowboys and other teams, and a all-time great at Ohio State. So let me just wrap up the Ryan Day thing by asking you what your hunch is. How many games does he need to win, if any, to keep his job in this upcoming playoff?
Now, to keep his job, like, that's a really big question. I do not believe that the administration at Ohio State wants to fire him. So, like, if they get a home game, it's a bad look if you lose it. I don't say it's a must win. Now, if you go out there and lay an egg, you get beat, 35-0, that's going to be tough. And I don't know what would happen at that point. But also, I mean, there's a level of financial concern with this as well. And like, this is around college football in general, because next year all these players, like $20 million of the athletic budget can be allocated to players.
Right.
If you have that, you would have a $30 million buyout on Ryan Day. Whoever you're going to get, people are like, get Dan Lanning. Dan Lanning's got like a $50 million buyout. Then you have to pay him probably more, would pay him more than he's making at Oregon. You start talking about, nine figures in these scenarios of like new expense added on next year. And like, honestly, around college football, I don't think this is just Ohio State thing with the NIL and everything that's been going on. I think there's a little fatigue when it comes to some of those decisions. And so to me, like, for anything to happen, it would have to be something of a cataclysmic embarrassment, because, Ryan, there's still an opportunity to go and have success. You're going to get a home game, which I think is pretty final at this point, probably about 85-90%. You need to win it, but it just can't be an embarrassment. I think I would anticipate him winning a couple games and that subsides. You win a national championship, it heals a lot of things, because keep in mind, Kirby Smart's 1-6 against Alabama. He just has two national titles in the kitty, so it makes everything feel a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true. It's like, it's so easy to say enough is enough, losing four straight years to Michigan, but you've got to have a solution, and it's so costly to move on. For those that don't know, Ryan Day's 47-1 against the rest of the Big Ten since he's been in it. He's an excellent coach, and it would be hard to find somebody as good. Didn't they have this issue with, was it Earl Bruce who couldn't beat Michigan? Who was the coach that had an unbelievable record but couldn't beat Michigan?
So it was John Cooper, and he had
Cole Cooper, right?
90s, yeah. Who had, you know, Eddie George and Terry Glenn, Orlando Pace, Mike Vrabel, Sean Springs, you know, Winfield, like a lot of dudes that you had out in Washington. I mean, good players, and they just like the last loss like this was 96, where they were 17-point favorites, and I think coming in undefeated. And if they win, they most likely win a national championship. And it was a similar situation. It was a low-scoring game. They lost 13-9, and like that's tough. And Coop was the same thing. It's like you're winning, but then he faded off at the end. To quite like, and just had some struggles generally with the program. But that's the problem, is everyone wants to an answer. I don't know who's definitively better, because when you start firing coaches, you get into a situation where it starts to spiral. And the other thing is, everybody loves these like some of the young players and the young talent on this team. You fire a coach, a lot of those guys committed to that coach. You have to anticipate that all those guys will be out of there. They will leave. They will hop on the portal. And now these great young receivers, the J.J. Smiths and guys that are probably going to be first-round picks, like those guys will be gone.
Yeah. You know, the other part of this, too, and we've seen this more in recent years, both in basketball and in football in college sports, is that the idea that, you know, you fire the guy you have and you're going to have basically your choice of anybody else. I mean, Dan Lanning's got a pretty good situation, you know, and we've seen that before where programs seem to think like we can move on and have our choice. Now, Ohio State's in the category of we would kind of have our choice like Bama did last year, but it doesn't always happen. All right, I guess the big story last night with the unveiling of this next to last, you know, the next to last projection, the next one we see will be the playoff, was Bama in front of Miami. Did you agree with that?
I'm not a Miami fan, like it just in general. And so as I look at that, like I don't know if Bama, honestly, I think the team that's playing the best right now, we start talking about some of those teams on the bubble, is South Carolina.
Right.
They lost a head-to-head game to Alabama, so it's tough to justify putting them over top. But to me, everyone's like, well, look at Miami. They've had, you know, two losses, and the teams are pretty good, and they're close. Yeah, but they should have had two more. And I'm going to be honest, like the NC State review and
the Virginia Tech thing was complete BS.
Yes, Virginia Tech. Sorry, not NC State.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech. And then the non-call targeting against Cal at the end of the game.
Right.
Like they had two. There were two other games. And by the way, none of those teams are all that great. And I love Cam Ward. And I if you told me, like, Cam Ward deserved to be in the playoffs, yes.
Yeah.
Because he carried that team. But they don't have a defense. They haven't really played anybody. And so I'm not going to sit there and stump for a team that, like, I don't think will be able to compete. They'll be able to score, but I don't think they'll be able to beat any of the current teams. And, like Indiana, I'm like, I think Indiana would beat Miami because they're more of a sound football team. Cam Ward would be the best player on the field. But I don't believe that they're just complete enough at this point. Maybe they will be in the future, but at this point, I can't get behind them.
You said you referenced this earlier, like, you know, in talking about Ohio State being in, you know, a tournament here upcoming, and they're going to be in, and they're probably going to play a home game against Tennessee or Georgia or somebody like that. That there isn't a clear cut favorite. Is there a team that you think that you like? I'll tell you what, before Saturday, I actually thought Ohio State was going to win the national championship. I thought they were the better team on the field with Oregon when they lost the game, personally. And then Saturday changed my view altogether. But is there a team in the projected field that you like to win it all, or do you think it's like four or five teams?
I mean, this year, a four-team playoff, I think, would have been tough, because I think there's probably, when you look at it, five or six teams that there could be a pathway for them to ultimately win this thing. And I just think that, like, Georgia, when they were playing well, they're as good as anybody. Same thing with Bama. But they've been inconsistent, and they've had some stinkers. Tennessee's out there. Ohio State, you put in that category. Oregon has been the best that has been ascending. That's probably the most consistent of everything, of every team. And, like, Penn State, I mean, if they beat Oregon this week, they'll get the number one seed. And so there's still probably five to seven teams that I could look at and say, okay, if they start playing well, they're talented enough to get it done. The problem is this year has just been that wild inconsistency when you're trying to evaluate these teams. Like, yeah, they lost to this game, and that was a good one, but then they lost this one. You know, and it's like same thing with Bama, same thing with Ohio State, you know, the Michigan game, the Tennessee loss to Arkansas. Like, everyone's got this loss that you look at, and you're like, ugh, like, that doesn't look very good at all. Like, how did that happen? And that's just due, I think, to some of the inconsistencies and matchup and maybe location. So this year, it's going to be intriguing. And I think we'll see, maybe an upset or two that we wouldn't have anticipated.
I actually think the worst loss of the year was taken by the team that right now I think might be playing the best of anybody, and that's Notre Dame. I mean, that Northern Illinois loss in week two, week three was inexplicable. They are the best. I mean, I don't know if anybody can stop them from running the football.
And that's the thing. Like, they've been running it really stinking well. And then the question becomes is, well, they run it well, but can they throw it? And I think that they've started looking better, and they've got a feel for what Riley Leonard likes and what he can do. But this is the same thing. People at Ohio State hire Marcus Freeman. He's a Buckeye. Bring him back. Like, last night, Northern Illinois lost. People are like, if he loses another, he's out. Like, this is it for him up here.
Yeah.
This is what college football is, the inconsistency of it all. And, yes, you are correct. Notre Dame, the last, like, 5-6 weeks of the season, has looked as good as anybody after throwing out, a stinker, and then they kind of muddled around a little bit. But then you kind of find your stride, and you figure out what your guys are good at, and you start rolling.
Yeah, I think what they found was Riley Leonard's not a drop-back passer, which is what they had him doing against A&M Northern Illinois, and then all of a sudden, they just became an absolute force running the football with him as well as part of the running game. This is great. I'm just trying to think. Denton and I were talking a little bit earlier just about the projected. Well, let me ask you this. If SMU loses to Clemson, Is Bama out, SMU stays in, or does SMU lose out and Bama stays in? Because that's really, it would appear that Clemson is the bid stealer of Alabama at this point. What do you think?
I think that there's some truth to that. I think largely like how that game looks. I think if somehow Clemson wins that game by like two scores and it doesn't really feel that close, I think SMU might slide out. But this is like, it's the worst case for Bama. Like, Clemson wins a close one and it's a battle. I think that there's a chance that Bama does slide out. So if you're a Bama fan, like, you better be cheering as hard as you can for either SMU, whatever it is. You just need a big victory. SMU wins. So if SMU wins close, it's fine. But if it goes the other way, you better put on your Clemson Tigers hat and hope that they run that thing up by 24.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the way we talked about it as well. It's got to be so obvious that SMU stepped it up and played a big boy and they weren't in their league. And that's how they, slip from, wherever they are. Eighth, I think, overall in the rankings to out, and Bama stays in. One of the things we were talking about just is, and we've been talking about this since last year, but what December 20th and 21st are going to be like, these first round games. And if you end up with, Tennessee in the Shoe, Alabama in South Bend, Happy Valley hosting a game, it's Athens hosting a game, it's going to be insane. Like, that you mentioned it earlier, and it's so true. Anybody that thought this was going to diminish the regular season hasn't been paying attention. So many more games have had legitimate meaning than ever before because of this. And that first round's going to be incredible. And the weather will play a factor. It does in late November anyway, but it'll really be a factor in the third week of December in some of those places.
It will be, and that was one of the things that people have talked about in the Big Ten and in North for a while. Like, let's play a bowl game in the North. Well, now you're getting a home site, and some of them be played up there. Here's one thing that's interesting. I think, ESPN has the first two cracks at this to select, and I believe, I think some of these matchups might hold or be close. Like, I think they take Notre Dame and Ohio State at home, and whoever they're playing, whether that's Bama, Georgia, Tennessee, like, you get those matchups, they're going to love it, and that'll be a big deal. Keep in mind this. So I think Penn State would probably play in one of those earlier windows. And the Saturday, the reason those games will be on TNT because the NFL is going to be having a game.
I know. Doubleheader.
Pittsburgh-Baltimore is going to be playing. And on the Venn diagram of fans, there's probably a heavy overlay between Pittsburgh Steelers fans and Penn State fans, and I guarantee you they will not be happy about that.
Interesting. I forgot about that. We've known that this is going to be one of the great days in the history of football, period, on television with the NFL doubleheader. Houston-KC is the other game. They're early. I think Pittsburgh-Baltimore late that day. One of those games will be Friday night. And if Alabama plays in South Bend, that's a lock for the Friday night game, don't you think?
I would think that's a lock for Friday night, and then the Ohio State game will be a lock for Saturday night. And so Penn State's going to play early. They've got a home game, so that'll be tough for people to want to consume that Pittsburgh game and go to that. I mean, Baltimore isn't like a long drive, so I guarantee you there's going to be a lot of people that are not happy about that situation.
Yeah, forgot about that one. This is great, Bobby. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Bobby Carpenter, everybody. Really good job. Nice having him on the show. He's at BCarp3 on X on Twitter. Man, the Ohio State doing talk show, sports talk show in Columbus this week. I mean, all you had to do was basically say, phone lines open, done, for 3 or 4 hours. Because that was... Denton, you can't fire a dude that's 66-10. That's what Ryan Day is at Ohio State. 66-10. He's 47-5 in the Big Ten. 47-1 against everybody but Michigan. Nuts.
You can't fire him, but I bet their thought process is if you're a booster, is anyone can come in and do this job. We do such a good job getting you guys talent. Anyone can come coach.
He did beat Michigan when he first got there, right?
And I think it was his first year. They haven't beaten Michigan since 2019, and I believe that was either his first or second year.
It's four straight losses to Michigan.
Yeah, but they didn't play in 2020. COVID.
Gotcha, yeah. Gotcha.
They would have beaten Michigan that year. That Michigan team was awful.
That Michigan team was awful in 2020. Yeah. All right. We will do NFL buy and sell when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. All right, Denton, we're buying NFL, selling NFL players, teams, divisions, concepts, anything you want. I'm going to start off by, this has been on my list here to mention, and I haven't gotten around to it for a few weeks. I'm buying Detroit running back Jahmyr Gibbs as an elite running back in the NFL. His speed is, I think, everything that Saquon Barkley has, Alvin Kamara has. His start and stop speed is ridiculous. He's got 973 yards on the season in 12 games. He's averaging 6 yards per carry. That's second in terms of running backs, only to Saquon Barkley, who's averaging 6.1 yards per carry. He's got 10 rushing touchdowns on 163 carries. Remember, they are a two-back, system with Montgomery back there as well. He's elite. And I don't know that people realize that until this year. This is his second year. He was a first-round pick. Remember, they took him, and people were like, what's Detroit doing? They took a running back and a linebacker in the first round in 2023. He's already passed his rookie year numbers. He rushed for 945 yards last year. Number 26 is a massive weapon. They've got a great offensive line, understood. I mean, Penei Sewell's ridiculous, but I'm a big fan of Jahmyr Gibbs, and I liked him coming out of Bama. I didn't really expect this. He is not necessarily every bit and every inch of what Saquon Barkley is, but man, he's not that far behind. Jahmyr Gibbs, superstar, elite running back in the NFL. What are you buying?
I might buy Saquon to an MVP. Yeah, we've talked about this a bunch over the last 2 weeks because every time you watch the Philadelphia Eagles, who I think right now is the best team in the NFC, it's very clear he's the best player. And they have a lot of good ones on that offense with A.J. Brown, with Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith. But it's very clear that he is the best player. I think he is the most valuable player right now in the NFL. I know it's really difficult for running backs. I mean, Josh Allen is playing sensational football in Buffalo, and he just had that moment with the touchdown to himself and the outstretch, and there's been pictures of it that look super sick. And I do think you need moments and, you know, those sorts of storylines, but Saquon has that too when he jumped over a dude backwards. I think I'm buying Saquon Barkley to win MVP and be the first running back to do it since Adrian Peterson did in 2012.
I think, you know, the Josh Allen performance against the Lions is going to be an interesting one. He's got, you know, other opportunities. If they end up as the one seed in the AFC, it's going to be hard. But I said this last week, I think, with you, and that is if he breaks Eric Dickerson's record, it's a lock. You're not going to break a 40-year-old record and not win the MVP. Now, Dickerson did not win the MVP in 84, but that's because Dan Marino had the greatest passing season in NFL history. First to ever throw for over 5,000 yards that year, the most touchdowns, 48 that year. It was such an outlier performance at quarterback. Dickerson finished second, but he would have won had Marino not had that year. Josh Allen's having a great season, but I'm with you. If he breaks Dickerson's record, it's a lock. I don't think people understand that Dickerson's record is 40 years old, and we're watching football in an era of you've got to be able to throw the football to win. And so if he does that, I'm with you on that. I am buying Frankie Louvu as just flat out one of the best, whatever you want to call them, linebackers, edge pass rushers, in the NFC right now. Like, I think he's got a chance to make the Pro Bowl this year, but moving forward, he's going to be a perennial Pro Bowl contender. He's got 8 sacks on the season. He's got, you know, a number of pressures as kind of a primary blitzer off the edge or a secondary blitzer inside. He's got incredible speed and quickness in like short areas. He's relentless with his motor. He's a great tackler. He anticipates so well. You know, how many batted balls have we seen in the last few weeks? Frankie Louvu isn't just a guy that they got right in free agency. He's a potential star in the NFL at the position. And, you know, Quinn and Joe Witt Jr. have some experience with a guy with that kind of talent. I'm not saying that he's Micah Parsons talent-wise, but there is a lot of Micah Parsons in the way they're using him. And in some ways, he may even be better in coverage. But I love Frankie Louvu. He's their best defensive player and arguably their best player. You know, it's a debate between Jaden, Terry, and Louvu in terms of who their best all-around player is. But they got a guy in Louvu who is, you know, in his prime and will be in it for another 2 or 3 years and is going to be in Pro Bowls plural for this football team, and is going to be one of those guys you have to account for and game plan for when you're the opposing offensive coordinator. I don't know if I've done this in this segment already. We've talked a lot about Louvu, but I'm buying Louvu as a legitimate Pro Bowl upper-tier linebacker, pass rusher in the NFC, in the NFL, for the next several years. What else are you buying?
So I have 2 more things to buy. I am going to stay along a very similar path as you, just on the other side of the football. This year, I'm buying that it's going to be Terry McLaurin's first All-Pro season. I don't think he's going to be a first-team All-Pro. I think that's going to be for the LSU guys, Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. But I do think that Terry McLaurin is going to get his first All-Pro nod.
Second-team All-Pro.
Second-team All-Pro. I think he's going to have north of double-digit touchdowns. I think he's going to have north of 1,200 yards. And if you got more than that, and unless CeeDee Lamb has a crazy couple of weeks coming up here, I think Terry's going to be not just top 5 in receiving yards, but top 5 in touchdowns as well, which is going to land him on that list.
So I agree with you. Chase and Jefferson are clearly the 2 receivers that would be all pro first team receivers. In fact, there's nobody close to either one of them right now. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's those two, Gap, and then whoever's next.
Yeah, so then we're talking about Lamb. We're talking about Amon-Ra St. Brown. We're talking about...
So you get three per team. You get three on first team, three on second team.
Oh, you do get three on first team?
Yeah, so last year it was
He's going to be an all-pro this year.
Yeah, last year was Tyreek Hill, CeeDee Lamb, Amon-Ra St. Brown. So he is definitely going to make
I agree. All-pro.
Actually, you get four on second team, it looks like. There was four guys last year.
He's going to be an all-pro this year.
So Terry's going to be an all-pro this year.
I mean, there are some guys. I mean, like there's some guys that may not have the numbers, but their impact is still really up there. And I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is one of them because I don't think he has the yardage or the touchdown numbers or the yardage numbers that Terry has. A guy like George Pickens is having a phenomenal season for a team that is playing at a very high level right now. A.J. Brown's in the conversation always. D.K. Metcalf is having a good season for a team that may win a division. Am I forgetting anybody else? What about Tyreek Hill? No, not this year.
I mean, if D.K. Metcalf gets all-pro over Terry, we are marching on the NFL offices.
Yeah, he's been awfully good, though.
He has, but he doesn't even lead his team in receiving yards right now.
It's because they are focused on him. He's a monster.
He is,
honestly.
He is a monster. There's no doubt about that. He also has played two less games.
But I'm with you. Terry's going to, if that many receivers make the first two all-pro teams, Terry is having an all-pro season. There are five games left, and he, has right now the third most pass reception yards in the NFL behind Chase and Jefferson. Now he's played 13 games, and there are three or four guys right behind him that have only played 12 games. CeeDee Lamb's one of those guys. Jerry Judy's one of those guys. He had a massive night the other night. Zay Flowers. George Pickens, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Yeah, to me, I think Chase Jefferson and Amon-Ra St. Brown end up being the three first-teamers, and then Terry leads the group on the All-Pro second team.
I have a feeling he has one more, or one really, really big game in the final five.
Yeah.
I think it's against Atlanta, to be honest.
All right. I am going, I've already done this, so I'm not going to do it again. I was going to sell the Houston Texans, who won again, and they've got a lead in the division. I don't want to sell them to lose the division because I don't think they're going to lose the division. They already swept Indianapolis, and they're two games up on them, which means they're three games up on them. I just don't like them as a team. I'm going to sell the Minnesota Vikings. I think I've done this before. I don't see a team capable of winning three playoff games to get to a Super Bowl, two playoff games to get to an NFC title game, and maybe even one playoff game on the road. Now, they're going to be in the postseason. I think they're exceptional defensively, and God, they've got weapons with Hockenson and Jefferson and Addison and Aaron Jones, who's got a fumbling problem. But, I mean, just in the last five wins in a row, all five of them were losable games against not great competition. Colts, Jags, Titans, Bears, the Cardinals. The Cardinals basically had an opportunity on a fourth down.
Yeah, I agree with you. I got one more thing to buy here before we go to break and try and get Kevin back on here. I'm buying alcohol for Joe Burrow's accountant. I love me some Joe Burrow, but I watched Hard Knocks last night. I, like you, am just realizing that Hard Knocks is a thing during the season. Completely forgot about that. But Joe Burrow said that he bought the Batmobile for $3 million. One, I'm jealous. I would love to be rich. If I had $3 million to spend on the Batmobile, I would also buy the Batmobile. I paid nearly $1,000 for a Batman tattoo, so I'd be all over the Batmobile if I had $3 million. But I gotta imagine if you're the accountant of one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL and you get word that he's dropping $3 million on a vehicle that you can't even take on the road, you'd be pretty darn upset about that. You'd be looking around being like, what on God's green earth is my client doing here?
Because they're going to have to play on the road. They're not going to win the division.
Are you back?
I'm back.
Okay. We lost.
Did you lose me?
Yeah, we lost you for a little bit.
Oh,
I went on this whole spiel about how I was buying alcohol for Joe Burrow's accountant because he just dropped $3 million on the Batmobile. It was actually probably one of my best four-minute chunks.
I'm sure it was.
I'm sure it was.
I'm really sorry I missed it, but you know what? I listened to the show afterwards, so I will be able to hear it.
You can go back and hear it.
So what I sold was the Minnesota Vikings from winning a playoff game. They're going to be in the playoffs. There's something about them I don't trust. Love them defensively and the way Flores has coached them up. Love everything skill position-wise. I don't hate Sam Darnold. I used to like Sam Darnold, and I still do, and I think he's in the perfect spot with Kevin O'Connell. But they're not going to win the division, even though they're a game behind Detroit. I think Minnesota gets to the postseason and bows out in the first round. That's who I'm selling.
All right, so I will sell one more thing. I'm going to sell, I don't know how I should phrase this, but I'm going to sell Pittsburgh in the playoffs because I think George Pickens is going to do something stupid to get him penalized and cost him a game. He is an absolute recluse at times. I don't know what it is about him. I don't know if he has emotional inability or inability to control his emotions, whatever it is, but every single weekend, he is doing something that is absurd, and I think he's going to do one too many things in the postseason, and he might cost him a game. So I'm going to sell the Pittsburgh Steelers unless George Pickens can get his emotions under control.
I think Tomlin said after the game Sunday, he needs to grow up. And
I mean, he's fighting people. He punted a ball into the stands last week. I mean, he's finding new ways.
It's a good call, though. It's a good call, you know. I mean, you get them in a playoff game, a first-round game against the Chargers or the Ravens if they win the division at home, and he blows up, and it's a 15-yarder that just ends up being the difference in the game. You can't have that. There's got to be a level of discipline. All right, when we come back, I've got a quick thought on Washington's hiring.
Bad night for the Wizards last night. They get obliterated by the Cleveland Cavaliers, 118-87. They're 2-17 on the season. They've lost 15 games in a row. The last time the Wizards won a game, it was October 30th. To put that in perspective, the World Series was still going on. The Dodgers have won a game more recently than the Washington Wizards have. In the NHL, the Capitals lost to the San Jose Sharks in overtime 2-1. You got the Terps in action tonight. They're playing Ohio State. Tip-off at 6:30 pregame right here at 6 on the Team 980. And that's what's trending.
All right. Had some technical issues connecting to my studio, so we'll do this last few minutes by phone. I wanted to talk briefly about Washington hiring Mark Klaus yesterday, announcing the hiring of Mark Klaus as the team's new president to replace the outgoing Jason Wright. So Klaus has been the CEO of the Campbell's Company since 2019. Prior to that, he had a career at Kraft Foods. He had a career as the CEO of Pinnacle Foods, which was a part of Conagra. Big brands like Vlasic Pickles and Swanson TV Dinners and lots of different consumer food brands. And I bring that up because I think that this is someone who comes from a background who understands branding, understands the cost to messing with long-standing brands that consumers have become emotionally attached to. You know, for all of the years that we discussed the name and, you know, the back and forth with those that wanted it changed versus those of us that said, well, we need more proof that Indian Country actually has a problem with it, and that proof really never existed in mass. But one of the things that I don't think they ever understood is the notion that food companies, consumer brand, big brand product companies understand, which is emotional attachment and also emotional disattachment to a brand. And the cost to Coke in 1985 when they went with New Coke and the hesitance to change branding for long-standing brands that have massive consumer followings. So just something to keep in mind. That's his background. He comes from the food business primarily, not to mention he was, a guy that graduated from West Point. He played basketball at West Point, was a helicopter pilot for 6.5 years, was a captain in the Army. This is a guy with great leadership, you know, skills. But I love the fact, and in talking to somebody yesterday after this happened, this is a guy very familiar with the power of branding and the risk associated when you change brands or you change a significant part of a brand that has an emotionally attached fan base or following. So just something to keep in mind. I don't know that if it means anything specific to a move right now, but I know this. From the moment they bought the team, they understood this to be an issue. And I think it's been a big issue for a majority of the 20-something people that own the team, the limited partners that own the team. So all, you know, signs point to this being really a guy with superb experience in running things versus, all due respect, a consultant. Think the organization perhaps made a good hire based on what I was told by a few people that I talked to about Mark Klaus, the team's new team president. All right, we're done for the day. Chris Russell next.